Welcome to the second episode of International House of Combat. Kelly Nelson here, and I'm joined by Steve Willey. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. Staying inside. We're starting to get a little bit of warmth in our area, so we can actually go for walks and just living in this new world and watching a lot of wrestling.
Yeah, that's very similar to myself, staying inside. I haven't left the farm in 26 days and counting.
Wow.
Well, I have a bit of an asthma issue that just started actually at the beginning of this year. And so that's one reason I've been letting my wife do the once a week grocery excursion and liquor store excursion too. Otherwise, yeah, she hasn't been going anywhere either. So it's not like I'm forcing her to do a bunch of things, but she's bravely volunteered her services to go pick up the groceries and booze once a week. Watching wrestling, watching different movies and TV shows. But yeah, here we are. And we, of course, just did the first episode last week. I saw some kind words and heard about some kind words from different people about the first episode. So thank you for all those who enjoyed it. And I know it's going to be right up the alley of a few people in our wrestling community, something like this. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more from them. Yeah, and feel free to offer suggestions for matches for Steve and I to watch and any kind of tips or anything, that'd be great. And so today we have a Japanese theme. We're going to look at two matches from Japan from two completely different eras and two completely different the opposite sexes. We're looking at a match with men and a match with women, and yeah, it should be interesting. The first one we're going to be looking at is from 1975. This is right up my alley. This is the 70s. You know, I love this decade. And this is from All Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's a match between Giant Baba, the legend of All Japan at a time. This was just a couple years after he started All Japan, 3 years, I guess. And he was, of course, the top dog, PWF heavyweight champion. And he's going against a legendary wrestler in his own right, Dick the Bruiser, who is definitely not someone a lot of people will look at as a super worker or someone you have to track down matches of to watch. I picked this for a couple of reasons. The first reason is I'm actually reading a Dick the Bruiser biography as we speak, and it's pretty interesting. I love reading about someone from that era that has prime was in the 1960s, where we have basically no footage, or next to no footage of. So it's great to read about that, because otherwise there's just nothing to go on footage-wise. And he wrestled all over the world. He wrestled from coast to coast. Was a big star, of course, in Indianapolis and in Chicago and in Detroit. Those were sort of his three strongholds. And at this point in time, he's 45 years old, and he's been wrestling for about 20 years. He started in 55, I think. Before that, he was a football player in the NFL for the Green Bay Packers for 4 years. That's in your neck of the woods, kind of, Steve, correct?
Oh yeah, that's where I work in Green Bay.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah. So this was, of course, the pre-Vince Lombardi Packers and post Curly Lambeau Packers. So they were in a bit of a funk when Dick the Bruiser played for them. He went by the name Dick Aflis, or Will Aflis sometimes, when he was a football player. And he wasn't a major star football player, but was there for four seasons and then realized he could make a lot more money wrestling, which was the case for a lot of football players back then, because the NFL wasn't the NFL yet. It was, of course, it was the NFL as far as that was their name. But as a league, they were not the powerhouse that they would become that would sort of start at the end of the 50s and then go forward. So after Dick the Bruiser was there. And yeah, so, and the salaries were not very high for a NFL player relatively at the time. And he could make a ton of money in wrestling. And he was pretty much a main eventer right from the get-go. He, of course, capitalized on his football fame at the beginning. So that helped him get pushed at the beginning. And then he was very talented. He had a great look. He cut a great promo. He was very believable as this roughhousing madman, sort of like a Steve Austin type character in a lot of ways. Badass. He was a heel for many, many years, drew great money, and then slowly transitioned into being a babyface in the States anyway, by like the mid 60s. And then, but he never really changed his character at all. He was still the same ass kicking, beer drinking Dick the Bruiser, but now he was just beating up heels instead of the baby faces. So in 1975, though, as far as the biography goes, I'm about to the late 60s in the story, but I skimmed ahead a bit just to see if there's any anything about this match we're about to watch, and there wasn't. But there's a chapter that sort of has 1975 as the beginning of the decline of Dick the Bruiser. So this is 1975, so we're right at the beginning of the decline of Dick the Bruiser. The chapter is, I think, titled The 10-Year Decline of Dick the Bruiser. So like I said, he was 45 years old. Those with a knowledge of wrestling history will know that he sort of overstays his welcome as far as being a top star. And he owned his own promotion in Indianapolis, so he pushed himself on top well past his prime. And yeah, there's people who watch Dick the Bruiser in the 1980s often, you know, don't have a lot of good to say about him because he was by then quite old and beaten up and slow. And yeah, so Steve, you mentioned before we started the call that you saw some of Bruiser in his twilight years as a wrestler.
Yeah, more in the AWA, he would show up from time to time, tag with the Crusher.
Yeah.
So that would probably be like 80. So, you know, like people around our age, it would have been like 83 to 86. So that's why I laughed when you said he was 45 in 1975, because that's pushing mid-50s at that point. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean nowadays that will get you a boneyard match of some sort in the WWE. So
yeah,
he would fit right in there.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I know he could have easily extended his career because, yeah, guys in the WWE are able to do that with the smoke and mirrors of modern wrestling. But, yeah.
Not in those days. Yeah. In those days, people are starting to notice when you're slowing down and,
yeah,
you know, the beginning of the rock and wrestling area where you're looking more towards, mm-hmm, you know, huge, even like a little bit before, like a Billy Graham type body type, Hulk Hogan type body type, as opposed to well beyond middle aged at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. The look of what was acceptable as a star wrestler changed dramatically. And yeah, the style had changed. And yeah, but yeah, in his prime, he was a huge star, and we just don't have much to judge him by as far as footage goes. So that was another reason I picked this one, is it was it's a longer match, 23 minutes, 35 seconds. So we're going to get a full length match. All Japan footage, of course, from the 70s is in usually great shape, looks really good. So yeah, I'm, and also one last thing is the thumbnail image for this match is a image of Baba with a crimson mask. So that was kind of the final thing for me to decide that, yeah, this is the one, because it's going to end up with Baba bloody at some point. So it could be fun. It could be horrible. Who knows? And then the second match we're looking at, we're flashing forward, I assume, to some point in the 1990s.
Actually, way before that. This is going to be July of 1983.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm way off.
Yeah, very early All Japan Women Joshi. So, wow. Yeah, we can introduce that, I think, when we get to that match, because there's a lot of interesting tidbits from that time period.
Yeah, I know so little on of Joshi that, I had no idea. Well, I just assumed it was the 90s. But wow, that's interesting. 1983. Okay, so that's great. So yeah, we got two potentially. Well, that match is going to be awesome. I'm almost positive. This one, the first one, we'll see. So we'll get started. I thought I wanted to end with a good match, or a great match. I didn't want to end on a guaranteed great match, right? So that's why I stuck Baba and Bruiser in the opening slot here. So it's this match is, of course, on the International House of Combat playlist on YouTube. So for everyone who's watching along, we'll do a countdown, 3, 2, 1, and on go, we'll start. 3, 2, 1, go. And immediately we have Lord James Blears with the PWF heavyweight title, showing it to the crowd. Lord James Blears was a big star in Hawaii as a wrestler, and then later a commentator, and also was the booker too in Hawaii during a time when that promotion was red hot. And in Japan, he was, I believe, the figurehead commissioner or president. I'm not 100% sure. Okay. Something like that. So that's why he's here. Bruiser, 45 years old.
yeah, he's got an interesting bowl cut going on.
It's horrible. Horrible haircut by Bruiser. That's my
first. The title, compared to something modern day, it looks very similar to the AEW women's title in that it's very thin, very small.
Yeah, that was kind of the style for many, many decades. The title belts weren't like gigantic like they are now. I'm trying to think of an exception to that rule. But most of the WWF title in the 60s and early 70s was very tiny in comparison to modern titles. And the old NWA title was quite small before it was the 10 pounds of gold. So that was normal. So here, Bruiser quickly takes Baba down to the mat.
His by the eyes and the nose.
Yes, vicious. His physique, he still looks pretty good at this point, I would say.
Yeah, barrel-chested.
Yeah.
Kind of like a fire plug type guy. Like someone you'd be afraid of.
Oh, totally.
Pissing off at a bar.
Yeah. Yeah, no, just a classic sort of look as far as the name Bruiser was so appropriate for him. Fit him perfectly. He would often have, of course, a cigar, and him and Crusher would always talk about drinking beer and carrying beer kegs around and all that sort of stuff. And at their peak as babyfaces, that team, Bruiser and the Crusher, were huge stars in the AWA, Chicago area. Just could print money with that team.
Yeah, they were big in the shows at Old Comiskey Park.
Right. Yeah, they would run shows at Old Comiskey Park. I believe they even, I know they held a show at Soldier Field. I think it was 1972. And I think Bruiser and Crusher were one of the featured attractions on that card. It didn't draw very well. It only drew 12,000 people, which is not much for a large football stadium.
Yeah, Soldier Field, I think, holds 66, at least back in the day before they did the remodeling.
Yeah, I think the main event for that card in 72 is Vern Gagne against Ivan Koloff, if I'm not mistaken. But for whatever reason, it didn't draw even as well as they could draw in just a regular arena in Chicago at
the time. It always boggled my mind in those days. Like, you saw it in Dallas, too, where they would run the big football stadiums. It just doesn't look well. Like, even if you're drawing 30,000, it still doesn't look well in a football stadium.
No, there's one in particular that Fritz in Dallas, it was his retirement card. And it was held at Texas Stadium. You've probably seen this, Steve. And they only drew 6,000. So it's just swaths of empty seats. and they filmed it really, I don't know, they filmed it on the side where it's focused on the empty seats rather than the crowd they did have or whatever.
Is that the one where he beat Bundy?
Yes, in a Falls Count Anywhere match for some reason.
Yeah.
I think it was because he wanted to have the pinfall take place in the end zone. I don't know. Because Falls Count Anywhere was not a match that was common in the States at that point, and not really common anywhere in the world as far as I know. It's kind of strange. But yeah, there was a lot of stadium shows in the 70s, early 80s, and some were really successful, like the Showdown at Shea's that the WWF ran. And some of the Comiskey Park shows the AWA ran were pretty successful as far as I know. But then there was also the ones that, like we talked about, didn't draw and looked really, really poor visually.
Baba vicious stomp on the nose. threw some chops. Chops him in the head. Didn't do very much. Bruiser selling that pretty big.
Yeah, so these guys, I believe they first wrestled in Japan in 1965. That was Bruiser's first tour of Japan. And Bruiser also did tours in 68 and 69. This was the old JWA promotion that was basically had a monopoly at that point and had both Baba and Inoki as their top stars. And then this was the first tour of All Japan for Bruiser, and he only worked 6 days on the tour, and this was his only singles match of the tour. Otherwise, he was in just tags. And then he did a tour again the following year, 76, and then that was his last for All Japan. And then in his last tour of Japan was in 1980 for the IWE promotion, which was the number 3 promotion in Japan, and often was known for a lot of blood and cage matches and stuff.
Yeah, not someone you usually associate with Japan.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of surprised. I thought he would have had a few more tours, because a lot of his contemporaries toured Japan quite frequently, like Killer Kowalski and Fritz von Erich and Gene Kaniski and such.
Baba trying to land the chops and the punches. He just has the skinniest arms.
Yeah.
For somebody, like.
Yeah, he's kind of an acquired taste. I know when I was younger. Oh, did he lose a tooth? He's acting like he did. When I was younger and I saw Baba and saw some matches of his, it was hard for me to buy him as a threat, because he looked kind of strange. But as I've gotten older and watched a lot of these 70s matches and 60s matches too, he's actually can be really, really good, and has actually a really good resume of matches if you can get past the look. Now we're getting a little crazy outside here with Bruiser choking Baba with a rope of some sort.
I don't know if it's a cable and then slammed him into a chair or a table, I think, a couple times. Referee is really in there trying to break it up. I don't see refs and get that physical.
No, and I hear the bell ringing, so perhaps, I believe, this is a 2 out of 3 falls match, by the way, which most of the major matches were back then. So I'm assuming Bruiser's been DQ'd here.
I'm always a fan of that psychology of sacrificing the first fall.
Yeah.
You see it in Iron Man matches too.
Yeah, so then you're weakened, he's weakened, and you can hopefully take then 2 straight falls.
Right.
I don't know. Of course, I don't understand Japanese, but that could be something that they're putting over right now. Or they should be if they're good at storytelling. But yeah, Baba looks like he's in deep trouble here.
Is that Jumbo I see at ringside?
I think so.
Number 86 on the back of his tracksuit.
Interesting. There's, it looks like a,
Bruiser threatening a crossbar.
Yeah, it could be Jumbo. Jumbo was pushed like pretty much right from the get-go as a big star in Japan because he was an Olympian, and that got a lot of press when they signed him. That was, I believe, in 72, 73. But I'm not sure the protocol as far as the young boys go, like who's eligible to go to ringside. Do you have to be someone who's still training, or do you have to, or can you just be sort of any younger wrestler? But yeah, actually he's in a different, he's got the shirt with 86 on it, if this is Jumbo, and the others have the jacket on, so he's clearly
right. Those
positioned
look more like young boys.
Yeah, so those are the young boys, and this, and Jumbo's just there. He's clearly, yeah, because he was Baba's tag partner, protege, so he's clearly taking the lead here. I'm sure there's some other future stars in that group that I can't pick out. And I noticed there was a American-looking wrestler in Baba's corner, in Bruiser's corner, but I'm not sure who that is. Didn't get a great look at him.
I was just about to say Bruiser doesn't need anybody with him, but
no.
Apparently does.
Yeah.
So they try to get him back into the ring? Is that what's taking so long?
Yeah.
They're not going to start the second hole until he's in the ring?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's got to be in the ring. Got to sort of go to your respective corner. And I think we're officially starting the second fall. I don't know if they're going to ring a bell or not.
Bruce is ready to punch him. There he goes.
Yeah, it even says Jumbo Tsuruta on the back.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder what the 86 is for. Maybe he got it when he was in the States. Yeah, that's actually probably what happened.
Jumbo taking a swing at him.
Having to be calmed down by the other young boys. No, that's a pretty good heel performance so far by Bruiser.
Very much so. Very simple offense,
yeah,
but effective.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very good, very stiff.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have to do too much. He's got so much personality. Chops sting.
Yeah, his facial mannerisms are pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a reason why this guy was a Hall of Fame draw as a wrestler. Back outside. Looking for more plunder, it looks like. Yep. Now he has a rope. Jeez. He's tying Baba.
Tying his wrist, you hog tying?
Jeez. What did Baba do to you, Bruiser?
The Lord is not happy with this. Shaking his head.
Into the ring post. Could be where the blood starts flowing.
Bruiser looks like a guy who would be chewing some tobacco during his match.
Yeah. Sig smoking a cigarette. Yes, Baba is definitely busted wide open. Oh, great crimson mask by Baba. I love it when it's like streaming in different directions. Really gory. And come back here. Still got rope around him. Now it's suddenly turned into a bull rope match.
Tying Bruiser to himself.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no escape. There's good psychology. Can't escape.
Yeah, very smart, because he has long limbs.
Just trading blows here. I was just gonna end up with Baba getting DQ'd. But that's great. I mean,
choking him out.
He was abused for so long. Can't take it anymore. He's blind with rage, blinded by blood. And yes, the referee has no choice but to disqualify Baba. Hopefully he can bring some order to this match for the third fall. Well, I'd say the first two falls were quite entertaining.
Yeah, Baba's dripping blood all over Bruiser. Young boys are having to come in and break it up. Jumbo's coming in. Oh,
yeah.
There, yeah, the American second just got thrown. I don't know.
No, I have no idea who it is.
No.
Awesome. So for a little context, this is April 10th, 1975. 4 days later in New York at Madison Square Garden, there's a legendary Greek death match between Bruno Sammartino and Spiros Arion.
Spiros, yeah.
Yeah, that's if you watch that whole feud, there's three straight matches at Madison Square Garden, and it's second only to the Zbyszko feud, I think, for Bruno's best feud. So that's the context of the time, 4 days apart. Both men selling exhaustion here.
I don't think Bruiser is bleeding. I think it's just all Baba's blood on.
I think so. Yeah. Still looks
he's
slobbering. Yeah, really selling the choking. Yeah, the pace, it's just so different from modern wrestling, but I really like it because you don't need to be rushing through things. Take your time, tell a story.
And right, as long as you're telling a story throughout a match like this, you're fine.
Alright.
I think something like this would actually do well. Maybe not in the WWE, but like in an indie or possibly even AEW.
Yeah, and there definitely has been a trend in recent years going back to more psychology-based storytelling, more character-based wrestling, especially in the indie scene. But the WWE is actually very much outdated in their presentation in a lot of ways. Outside of NXT, NXT is the closest to a sort of traditional storytelling territory, if you will. Baba's smiling, he's enjoying it.
There you go, Bruiser back into it now.
Yeah, this has just been a brawl from the get-go, pretty much. Which is great, that's what I hoped for. I was dreading some like boring mat work. Oh, and now this, I wish I knew who this was. Young, presumably American wrestler laying the boots down on Baba, now taking on. Oh, here's another one. I think that's Bob Orton Jr., the other American that came in. I'm almost certain it is.
Yeah. Now it's just a giant brawl. Outside of the ring.
This is great. Now we got Bruiser and Saruta throwing.
At it now.
Yeah, this is great stuff.
This would never happen in like New Japan or All Japan today. Never.
Yeah, right, because they're so strict with the schmozzy type stuff.
Baba's trying to hang him.
Things have just gotten out of control. Oh, there. First high spot of the match. And it's over.
Oh, got him. Dropkick.
That was awesome.
I did like the Americans actually coming out to help because
there's
one, two, like six guys, Baba.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely Orton.
Yeah,
Does he have an orange?
He has an orange, yeah. I think fruit is being thrown into the ring in garbage, yeah. Wow. Well, that match got over great. That was awesome. The crowd is still upset at what's going on. Trophy being presented as well. Bruiser's not done. Trying to wrest the belt from Lord James Blears. Saruta. Oh, my. So this is planting the seeds for an eventual big match between those two guys. I don't know if that happened or not. Maybe in 1976. The unknown American wrestler getting abused.
He's not messing around. He's throwing some punches in.
Jumbo. Man possessed. Oh, who is that? It's bugging me. I'm going to have to check.
Yeah, it's bugging me too.
I should have had the... I did look up the card earlier, but I didn't take note. I did notice Bob Orton's name, though, so that's why I knew for sure it was him. But he was pretty easy to pick out anyway.
Yeah, Baba's got like six guys with him.
Well, he was the godfather of Japanese wrestling in a lot of ways. Got his crew. Bruiser said he'll be back, I believe. I wonder if there is a rematch from the following year out there on YouTube. Maybe something to consider. Ringing the bell now. Lots of post-match gaga here. Bruiser definitely missing several teeth.
Yes.
So let's see.
I can't tell if people are cheering Bruiser as well.
Maybe. I mean, this was still definitely in the era where it was Japanese hero versus big bad American foreign menace, based still on World War II feelings. Yeah. It wasn't until really the Funks got over as baby faces in the later 70s that things began to change. I think the other wrestler was Mike George, a wrestler I don't know too much about. They're still going at it here. But of the other Americans on the card, I don't think it was Steve Kern. Definitely wasn't Mark Lewin.
Not Steve Kerner.
Yeah, definitely wasn't Killer Kowalski. Yeah. So I think it was Mike George. That's why we don't. That's why he's not very recognizable, because Mike George wasn't. I think he had some renown in certain areas, but I couldn't tell you a thing about him.
Likely setting up a tag for later on if this wasn't the last.
I think, according to wrestling data, it was the last match of the tour for Bruiser. I think they may have had a tag match prior. Let's see. Saruta teamed with Destroyer against Bruiser and Killer Kowalski April 7th. And there was a few other tags, but no Baba Saruta team against Bruiser. Interesting.
Baba always towers above his opponents, yeah. But you really don't get it, the size differential, until you see him in the crowd.
No, he was what, 6'10", I'd say? 6'9", yeah. 6'10"? Yeah.
And when you see him, you know, next to guys who are like 5'6".
Okay, so we'll pause the next match just to have a bit of a debriefing on that match we just watched, Steve. So, thumbs up for that one?
Yeah, better than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Not a... Not like you said, not very many high spots. The only high spot was the dropkick at the very end.
Yeah.
But bloody brawl.
Yeah.
A lot of inside and out. A lot of a lot of fighting amongst the seconds for 1975. It's in Japan, no less. That's a cool thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I was pleasantly surprised too, because that one. I mean, I looked on PWO beforehand, because they have an extensive, the message board, they have an extensive match discussion archive going back, you know, even into the 20s and before. And for April 1975, there was no listing of this match, so nobody's reviewed it on PWO. So when I saw that, I was a little concerned. I was like, you'd think if a match, like a good match from this time, you'd think it would have warranted a thread. So I guess I'll have to start it later today and get some discussion going on PWO about Dick the Bruiser versus Giant Baba from April 10th, 1975, a hidden gem, I believe. And definitely the best Dick the Bruiser match I've ever seen. So, yeah, awesome.
No one can ever accuse us of not being tastemakers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, two episodes
on the cutting edge of 45-year-old matches. We're on the cutting edge.
Oh, yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Plenty of people talking about modern wrestling, so there's plenty of room out there for people talking about 70s wrestling. Now we'll go on to the next match, Jaguar Yokota versus La Galactica. Steve, you'll have to set this one up for me, or for us.
Sure. Like you, I didn't have much of knowledge of Joshi, and I still don't. I'm not going to admit otherwise. I've seen a lot of like the mid-90s stuff, you know, like your Hokuto's and whatnot, like most people have in our circles. But I had gone back and bought a couple of DVDs a few years ago of early All Japan women's wrestling. And so this is 1983, so it's a bunch of 81, 82, 83, 84 matches. The Lina Sasuka, whose name obviously is I wouldn't say co-opted because it's
Say
the word I'm wanting
Asuka's,
to use. It's respect.
A homage. That's where she got Asuka got the name from, definitely. So it's an homage to Lina Sasuka. The pronunciation is different. Spelling is the same.
Right. And so Lioness Asuka, I've seen a couple times and, you know, wanted to go back in and look at some of these early matches. And I was shocked at the different presentation, even compared to what we just watched. You know, this is essentially a similar, you know, All Japan Women's.
Yeah.
So I don't know too much of the relation if it's the same company and just running different events.
Different, totally different companies. Yeah. All Japan women.
And again,
was just
that shows
women.
Shows you my knowledge of Joshi right there. But the presentation of the matches were different. The crowd heat is going to be off the charts. Like, you know, stuff you don't even see today. It's going to, people are so into these matches. And even the kickouts, we'll see that are much different than you would see in any other men's match of this time or any time really. So this match in particular is a mask versus hair match, something you'd see more in Mexico. La Galactica is from Mexico. She started wrestling in 1969. So she is a 14-year pro at this and did a little bit of research for her. She is still active as recently as of last year.
Of course.
50 years of wrestling. And I believe it was a mask versus mask match or mask versus hair match that she had last year as well. known originally as Pantera Serena. Also known as La Galactica 2000, Lady Metal, and Lady Discovery is what she is known as today, from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico. So, yeah, not much known about her. There's really not that much out there. Wow. Like, she has a cage match page, but nothing has been updated since 2008, and they don't even have specific matches on there. for her. And Jaguar Yokota, see, this is very interesting to me, the way Joshi ran back then, because they started at such an early age. So she debuted in 77 at 15 years old. Yeah. And they had these mandatory retirement ages back then.
Yeah.
So she had to retire at 24, partially because of a shoulder injury, but also because it was that retirement age. And don't know if at that time the men just didn't want to see the – I mean, it's just kind of skeezy.
It was totally sexist. It was – the belief was that, you know, your looks would start to fade. And it was all about pushing their youth and beauty. That was the main draw in a lot of ways for the All Japan women.
And you still see that in Stardom today, some of that sexism, like, you know, having the men kind of come up to the women after the shows and trying to and the women's kind of selling their stuff and trying to tap into the men's gaze and the creepiness factor of even in Stardom still today that the women are fairly young when they start. So,
yes.
For Jaguar, she did come back. From 1995 to 1998, she had her own promotion called JD apostrophe is how it was spelled. Hmm. So just like as we talked about Dick the Bruiser, she also, of course, when you own your own promotion, got to push yourself as the main star. She is a two-time WWWA World Singles Champion, and this is a title match. This is a defense for her. And like I said, it is mask versus hair.
Wow.
So
lots of stakes here. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Mask, hair, and title.
Wow. That's great. Great info. Yeah, I'm super excited about starting this one. Let's get it to the beginning. Okay, you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay. 3, 2...
All right, I can count in for this one.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Okay, and we'll start in 3, 2, 1. Okay. And La Galactica, obviously the one in the mask, gold.
Yeah, and that's the referee standing next to her. I believe. Wow. 1983.
Now that is a tiny belt. I stand corrected. That looks like a belt you would see for kids at Target.
Yeah, it doesn't even have side plates on it. But it was a very prestigious title at this time. Now we're getting a bit of a opening ceremony. Wow. The hairstyle.
Yeah, so Jaguar would be 21 during this match, and
crazy.
She is. Yeah, I think it said she was like 5'3", 115.
I know. Yeah, the contrast with the first match in size is great, of course. But it's only 8 years later. It's not too. You know, it's. I don't know if you'd even say it was a different era in a lot of ways. It's 83 wrestling in North America anyways was very similar to mid-70s wrestling still in many parts. So it's not that much later, not that much different. But we're going to see something completely different from what we saw previously. Crazy.
What would you say La Galactica is wearing for the intro here? Like a red maroon suit jacket?
Yeah, it's very like almost kind of bullfighterish in its like the length of the coat where it cuts off around the just well before the waist. So that was my first impression. Wow. There's a so the commentary team is a man and a woman, it sounds like.
Right. Again, very rare for something in North America. I mean, when would you see a female commentator? Maybe Missy Hyatt would be the one that first comes to mind.
Yeah, and there was Mike McGurk in Houston, that infamous team,
right,
with Bruce Pritchard and the Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty. A horrible commentary team, actually. Just a total mess, train wreck, all the train wreck team. But yeah, no, very few.
And speaking of Houston, the NWA, without having, since they don't have any TV in the can right now, they just ran some Houston footage last yes. night, the day after.
Yes. Yeah.
Complete with commercials.
Complete with commercials. Yeah, I haven't watched that yet. I have it saved and ready to go. Yeah, that's cool, because they're not going to be showing any power for quite some time. So they're having to get inventive, and that's great because they do have a pretty extensive archive of classic Houston footage. So, yeah, there could be some really good stuff. Pete, my partner from WorldCast, said the Superstar Graham versus Tiger Conway Jr. match from that show was previously unreleased. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Again, Pete's an expert. I mean, him and Johnny did a podcast for a few years on Houston wrestling when they had that, the NWA On Demand service. That was pretty much, I think it was exclusively Houston wrestling.
Right.
So it's cool that they're still putting out new matches or unseen matches. There could be some definite gems in there. Too bad it takes place in Houston, Steve. We can't watch one of those matches for our show.
Yeah.
But I'm sure somebody's
going to come up by you, and then we can.
Yeah, we can start another podcast. We'll bring back the Houston show with Pete. But I'm sure, yeah, somebody's going to dig into it. If not us, actually, on WorldCast, perhaps myself, Johnny, and Pete, we may, depending on how it goes in the future. So we're getting.
And we have a bit of a lucha start today.
Yeah. I was going to say that. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's a. A mesh of styles, cultures. I know lucha got over pretty strongly in the 70s in Japan because of Mil Máscaras and then some of the other guys, but especially Máscaras. He was a huge star in Japan.
But I, yeah, we even saw Jaguar do like a head spring out of a move at the beginning of the match.
Yeah. But yeah, I have no idea how strong the lucha influence was in Joshi. But they probably had quite a few workers from Mexico too. Wow.
This would not be out of place in a Bryan Danielson match in like Ring of Honor.
Oh no. No, this is a timeless style right here. It's a great logo.
Oh yeah, in the center of the ring, it's beautiful. Now I don't know who Galactica's second is either, but she is quite tall.
Okay, right, yeah, that's
and
the person
quite
I thought
the
was
set
the,
of hair.
Yeah, I thought that was the referee at first. Yeah, it's very tall. Yeah, I didn't get a great look at her.
Very much a Andre the Giant 70s hairstyle as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's Sherry Martel. I know Sherry was involved in Japan around this time. But I don't think that's who it is. But the hairstyle is similar to what Sherry had. No, actually, I think that's Monster Ripper from Calgary. She was a big star in Japan. She would be, what was her name in the WWF in the mid-90s? She played the...
Bertha Faye?
Yeah, Bertha Faye. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's who it is. Very young. She was very, very young.
Yeah.
Maybe even still a teenager at this time. But yeah,
I don't know if you could... I don't know if you heard the crowd really piping up when Jaguar had the Boston Crab and you saw like a guy waving a flag in the crowd and someone was blowing a whistle.
Yeah. And this was before, well, I guess I know a bit about the history of Japanese women's wrestling, how in the late 70s you had the Beauty Pair and they were basically like rock stars because they also were singers. And so they were like teen idols or whatever. And then later in the mid-80s you had the names are escaping me now, but they were, what was their names? Anyway, they were huge, huge stars, and it was similar where they attracted just tons of young girls as the primary fans. The crowd here, though, looks to be kind of just a regular wrestling crowd full of older people and some younger people, but not like a huge group of screaming teenagers or anything.
No, but coincidentally, Jaguar, I remember reading this yesterday, Jaguar was inspired to join by seeing the Beauty Twins, or the Beauty Pair, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that started a lot of people, a lot of women into wrestling. The Crush Gals, that's the team from the mid-80s that became even bigger stars than the Beauty Pair. And that was Lioness Asuka and Nagaya.
Galactica's just vicious. threw her into the post and outside from the apron, and she went flying to the crowd.
Yeah, and then she has Monster Ripper on the outside helping her. It's basically a handicap match. Jaguar insisting she backs up, let her back in the ring. Galactica on her immediately.
Just a terrible outfit she's got, Galactica. Silver ill-fitting mask.
I know. It is, yeah. It leaves a lot to be desired. The footage quality is a little faded here. Colors don't turn up too well.
I think the DVD I have is considerably better.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember the Crush Girl stuff, and maybe this will pick up later, but like a lot of power bombs and stuff you're not expecting to see in 83.
No.
But Galactica is just gross, like biting the fingers, working the arm.
Vicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joshi's something I've always, kind of... Oh, that's a great escape.
Yeah, they don't work for two counts at all. They get out. That's the way they kick out. And they'll do it at zero. they're not waiting for the near falls or the false finishes in the beginning.
Yeah. As I was saying, Joshi's something I've always sort of pledged to myself almost like as a New Year's resolution every year. Oh, this is the year I dig into it and become familiar with it other than just knowing like some general details. But I still have never done that. But maybe now. Here's another podcast idea. Nobody in our circle anyway that I can recall has ever done a Joshi podcast. kind of surprised somebody hasn't taken a chance on it before. I know on the PWO message board there's some huge fans of Joshi, and they always speak so highly of it, and there's a lot of great posts and writing about it there. Oh, just blatant interference here. This must have been quite the devastating leg lock, or wow. Is this?
It's like a half figure four.
Yeah. Interesting. Referee is fed up with Monster Ripper.
Yeah. Got really red shoes.
Yeah.
Blatantly interfering. Now she's back in the ring.
Oh, Jesus. I saw her wrestle once live, Monster Ripper in Calgary. It was a Stampede reunion show in 1992. That actually had a lot of interesting names on it. Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit. And I can't remember what gimmick she was going by at that point. She had a few different names over the years.
None of the interference is making her break at all.
No, and referee doesn't seem to have any power to do anything really about it. Now a full figure.
This must. Yeah, this must be a no disqualification match.
Yeah. Nice. Let's see. That's a move that Asuka uses quite often. I wonder if Jaguar was the innovator of it. Ooh, that was a nice suplex. Oh, and into a pin, too. Beautiful. Jeez, get Monster Ripper out of there! This is insane. Oh, my.
Why wasn't the ref counting?
I don't know. The rules are pretty loose here. Oh, Tombstone. Pile driver. Although at the time it was not called a Tombstone Pile Driver. Yeah. La Galactica is in trouble. Not for Monster Ripper, this match would have ended long ago. Rhonda Singh, that was Bertha Faye, there Monster you. Ripper.
Yeah.
In Stampede, she was Rhonda Singh. Yeah, she died very young, 2001.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was only 40. So here she was 22.
Interesting that you had to have the Joshi girls retire at 24, but you could have Galactica come in from Mexico and be... she debuted in... She was 64 now. So this was 37 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So in her late 20s.
Yeah. Incredible 50-year career, and there's not much info out there. I guess if you know where to look, Spanish sites and stuff, maybe there would be some info, but yeah.
Oh, jeez.
More interference. The referee is just giving up now.
I don't know who the second referee official who just keeps coming up on the apron.
You're right.
But not actually doing anything.
No. And now Ripper has a... Are the scissors already out? Oh, my. Beating her with a shoe.
Jaguar's fired up. She's screaming.
Yeah, I think she did cut a bit of her hair off. She's irate. And speaking of... This is crazy. Oh, more hair. Jesus. Fighting over a pair of scissors now.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. I'm going
to... Oh, she's ripping open her mask, cutting her mask open.
Oh, man. Yep. That's so dangerous.
But again, it's brilliant because it's a hair versus mask match, mm-hmm. So there's scissors at ringside.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I've never seen that before, though, that I can recall where the scissors came into play before the end of the match. Mm-hmm. Big slam. No.
Interesting that they, with the suplexes she does, and I don't know if this is exclusive to her or others do this as well, but it's all leading to like a bridge mm-hmm. of some sort. They're all directly to a pit.
Yeah. Oh, now the referee is down. Second referee down. This is awesome.
Jaguar's had enough. Whoa!
That was awesome.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible speed.
So fast.
Oh!
Wow. Nobody home. So crazy.
Bashing the refs with the chairs.
Yeah.
Backfiring here.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. Sent on off the top rope. Oh, bombs away by Monster Ripper. Oh, jeez. Big splash. How can Jaguar get out of this?
She can't.
Wow. Oh, my. So that's it? One fall?
Yeah, miscarriage of justice.
Wow, serious miscarriage of justice. That's crazy. Oh, I wish I knew more about this story. Why, like, the interference was allowed so freely. And how Jaguar will eventually get her vengeance. Doesn't she have any friends? There's somebody trying to break it up.
Yeah, Monster's just... She does have friends, but Monster's just throwing them all away.
Yeah.
Where were they before?
Yeah. She was a monster. It's crazy. I can, you know, I knew that she wrestled in Japan at a very early age, but I've never seen any of this. But now I totally understand why she was such an attraction as a heel, because she was a monster. Towered over everybody. And was really athletic, too, at this time. So is the is the referee saying this is was a bunch of bullshit and not allowing for the haircut, but no, it looks like
I think it's just the opposite because they were still going.
Yeah,
they were all going at it. And,
yeah,
Galactica has the belt.
Presumably a haircut is going to take place, yes. Jeez. But yeah, talk about getting sympathy for your baby face. I mean, she was totally robbed.
Yeah.
She had no chance. Jeez.
It's just a shock in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
This girl's crying.
Yeah. Oh my. Give her a. It's not the full shaving.
Yeah, I don't know if that happens in the back.
Yeah. I don't
know. Bobby Lashley. Lashley gonna hold her down.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you know? Did she go full bald?
No, I don't. But the.
I know the famous match from 85. The names, I don't want to butcher them, and I'm not even sure the particulars, but that one had, like, yeah, so much emotion in the crowd crying, or women, young girls crying in the crowd, and I believe that was a full shaving.
I'm trying to see if there's...
It was Dump versus Gaia, I believe.
I might have seen that match.
1985. It's one of the most, you know, heavily referenced Joshi matches as far as a must-see match. New champion. Wow. That was great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Just a lot of hate.
Oh, totally. And the whole thing with Monster Ripper and so many different directions you can go from that match. Obviously, Jaguar's got to eventually take on Monster Ripper. And, she has to get her revenge on Galactica. Yeah, so the booking is great. Yeah, that was great. Great choice, Steve.
And 37 years, spoiler, she does win the title back not too long after.
Okay. Yeah, well, I would have been shocked if that wasn't the long game there, the long story being told. But yeah, that was fun. Yeah, I think two completely different matches, but two extremely enjoyable matches on today's show.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just been a pleasure looking back at some of this stuff that, like you said, not many people know about, not many people talk about. When you say that first match doesn't even have a thread on PWO,
mm-hmm.
that's showing how weird this is. So
yeah, no, and I feel bad about the Joshi match not having too much knowledge. It's yeah, not that I'm bragging, but I do like to think I have a pretty good grasp on wrestling history, but it's mostly North American based. And yeah, so I'm in totally uncharted territory there, but we have all the time in the world to explore it further. And I think I'm going to finally make that resolution to start looking into it on my own free time. I guess the big barrier for me is I've never known really where to begin. and it's, you know, or where to,
right.
what's considered like the, you know, the order to go or whatever. But yeah, I'll just maybe now that I've seen Jaguar, I'll start following some of her matches and yeah, go from there. But great stuff.
Yeah, early stuff seems to be a good place to start. She does have some stuff with the Crush Girls coming up, or you can do that mid-90s. But I mean, that's the joy of a podcast like this, is that you have an incredible knowledge of the past, but there's still so many different areas to learn about and see. And sometimes it's nice not having that history and not knowing about it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, this is, yeah, it's going to be a learning experience. That's for sure. And yeah, that's a good idea, starting more in the starting right from the beginning and then working forward. I know the 90s stuff is the considered like the gold standard, but yeah, I'm being an 80s guy, I'll start in the 80s and go from there. Okay, well, that was fun. So, Steve, you have any plugs for this week?
We'll be doing the main event every other week, going over WrestleMania. It pretty much it got went over well with a lot of people, but not me. It was not enjoyable for myself. And then we will be, you know, talking about old footage every other episode. So once a month, we look at 2002 TNA, which we're almost done with, thankfully. And we were doing New Japan Classics, a lot of 90s and aught stuff, but we with the greatest WCW match project, I think we're going to do a shift over to that once a month, and hopefully trying to get them to do some more rare stuff as well. And what's the other podcast I'm doing right now during our break is with Nate Milton over at the Kings of Sport, my main event partner, and it's called TDT Talks. The first one is part of the Kings of Sport feed. The rest that we're doing are going to be inside his Patreon, which is $5 a month minimum. I can help him out. Is Nate's one of my favorite podcasters, literally in the world. Just a great guy, great voice. And so that is, as he says, TDT talks for the darkest timeline. It's 50% group therapy, 50% podcast all stars. And we just kind of talk about how we're doing throughout these odd times, talk about what we're doing to get by, things that we're enjoying, you know, pop culture wise. It's been very interesting because we have some people involved with Place to Be Nation, some people involved in other podcasts. The last two people we've had are on like Black Lightning Podcast, which I believe is an official podcast somewhat associated with DC. It's been between this and that podcast is kind of been my lifesavers over the last week, just to be able to talk to other people outside of my own family. So. It's very, very interesting time to do podcasts and do a lot of new projects.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the whatever you want to call it, silver lining to this whole mess is that yeah, it's given us opportunities to do things. I mean, this, for example, International House of Combat probably wouldn't have happened without the coronavirus pandemic. So, thanks, coronavirus. And but as for myself, WorldCast is finally back in action. That just dropped a few days ago, and we're almost done 1983. Got a big Star Wars show coming up to review, and then it's finally into 1984. And I'm doing the Greatness of Randy Savage, the watch along of the unreleased Randy Savage DVD. I've been doing that every few days or whenever I have time to knock it out. I'm onto disc two now, so it'll be another month or so, and I'll get through the whole thing. And then, you know, there's a few things with the Dark Side of the Ring going on right now. There's a few coming up that I would really enjoy watching and doing a podcast about. The one on Jimmy Snuka and the whole death of his girlfriend deal. And the murder of Dino Bravo, that's one that jumped out at me. So I could see, yeah, I'll probably be doing something about one of those shows eventually. And yeah, who knows? There's all kinds of things. And next time on this show, well, we haven't planned anything, but there's a lot of possibilities, of course. And it'll be some interesting stuff, no doubt. All right. Well, thanks, Steve.
Absolutely.
And yeah, we'll do this again in a week's time. Good night, everybody.
Sounds good. Take care.